And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is the Athletic Hockey Show.
Hey, America, and all of the provinces, or whatever's north of us. It is Tuesday. The Athletic Hockey Show is back, and I'm Craig Custance, joined as always by Sean Gentile, and there's a ton to go over today. Sean, a great show. We got Marty Walsh, the executive director of the NHLPA, like for a very serious hockey interview. Like
it was serious.
We dove into the weeds on salary cap and the Coyote. We just dug in on some issues. We're talking politics.
Honest question, do you think that's the most serious interview we've ever taken part in on this show?
Yeah, probably.
I can't think of any outside of the roundtable with when we talked to Katie and
yeah.
Ian and Robson about the Eugene Melnyk story. I don't think we've ever had a more serious conversation on the show, which I was not expecting. There were multiple points where, let's say if the tone were a little bit different, I would have made jokes, and I reined it in.
I bit my tongue a couple times.
Can you guess which one? How about this?
What? Which one?
Can you guess the moment that I deliberately avoided making a joke, despite that
if
being my impulse?
If we spent 5 more minutes with Marty beforehand, because we kind of hit the ground running, and we're making jokes, and I think it probably would have had all we needed was like just a little bit more of a crack, a window opening there to be our normal selves. But it probably is for the better.
I'm going to save, how about this? I'm going to save the reveal for the point that I almost made a joke at until after the interview. I'll say that whenever we're coming out of
like
the
when
interview.
We have him back, cause I'm sure we will.
I don't want to ruin it. I want to see if people
like,
can guess it.
I bet it'll be completely different. And that's fine. Like, look, we should change gears occasionally and talk some actual. So
100%, because there's serious shit taking place within the NHLPA. And I think we touched on a lot of it. We touched on the Pride situation and we touched on the Coyote situation, which everyone loves a joke about. It is not, it's serious stuff for players.
Like, people want to, like, hockey players want to play in full arenas that aren't secondary.
It's a worker, it's a worker environment, right? or question. It's a question of labor of a labor environment. That's the way it needs to be treated, and it seems like he is treating it as such.
Only the NHL, like we've just accepted that the Coyotes have been playing as the second tenant in a college. Like,
it's insane.
I just can't even imagine. I know we've talked about this, but it's just like, oh yeah, that's what the Coyotes are doing, and they're going to do it for another year, and that's what it is. And he's like, you know what? This isn't great for the employees in this situation.
And it's not something that I forget personally.
I think about it every day, actually.
I wake up. I have a banner hanging above my bed that says the Coyotes are the second tenant in an NCAA hockey arena. But like, I get tired of talking about it. Right? Like, it feels like it's just something we rail, like we talk about a lot. And it's human nature to only want to discuss that sort of stuff so often, right? But that does a disservice, I think, to the absurdity of the situation and the unfairness of the situation for labor in this case. So I'll tell you what, Marty ain't forgetting about it.
No, he's not.
he has no such issue with talking about that every day because that's his job.
So you wrote about, just to tie in the Coyotes a little bit, you had a great story with Mike Russo this week on the Atlanta Thrashers that, that turned out really well. I knew you were working on it.
We worked on it in bits and pieces. Like that, we started reporting that out in March, and we were going to run it in March and then tabled it just because we both got busy with other things and thought it would make more sense at this point.
Yeah.
But it's one of those ones that, like, I've had this conversation with people like over the last couple of days. They're like, boy, you were working on that for a long time. Like, it didn't take that long. We just put it in a, like, basically, like,
you
saying, like, oh,
off?
That's kind of like, oh, that's it. Like, that's what it was? I'm like, well, okay, we put...
Oh, that was the reaction? We were like,
no.
This is
no,
the I'm story you've been working on for a month?
Wow, this Atlanta story that I've heard so much about! No, nobody's reacted that way, but it was something that we started working on after the GM meetings and kind of tabled until the start of the final, deliberately.
Like, so there was that, and then Pierre wrote about Gary's State of the Union.
Yes.
And there's these kind of just like, oh, it just seems like this is going to happen. But there's also like, no, there's no expansion. So it's got to just be the Coyotes to Atlanta, even though we got the Salt Lake City bit going on. But I mean, what if we're talking about it, like it's a finished thing?
Yeah. Let's see here. I'm trying to think
how can
how
you
I
say
can
this
be
without
judicious about this. Is the most likely outcome the Coyotes going to Salt Lake? Probably. Like if you had to rank the outcomes, I feel like that would be first.
Okay.
That does not mean that there's not a legitimate chance that one of two other things happens, which is they somehow hammer something out in Arizona with that Mesa site that's starting to come up again. It's humiliating to even bring up on the podcast, but it's true. And then there are people around the Atlanta situation who think that if push comes to shove, and this is their chance that they can bring that team to Atlanta rather than Salt Lake City. If the Coyotes move, if that happens, if the PA and the league decide to pull the plug on this, there are people in Atlanta who think that that team could play in Georgia rather than Salt Lake City. Important ones.
What about Houston? Houston always seemed next at the bat in the U.S. for me.
The issue with Houston, far as I understand it, is what it's been for the last few years, which is Tillman Fertitta, who is the Rockets owner, has the booking rights to the arena. He doesn't own the arena, but he has the rights to it. And I think there's questions over whether he wants to or is capable of purchasing a hockey team. I think that's kind of the outstanding issue.
Kind of need that.
If there's if right now, under the terms of Tillman Fertitta's lease with the Toyota Center, which is the arena there, if there is a hockey team, if there's an NHL team in Houston, he gets right of first refusal to it. And I don't think that's that situation is complicated.
A couple things in the coaching world, we want to touch on. Especially in the U.S., the Anaheim Ducks hired Greg Cronin, who was Colorado Eagles AHL coach. Apparently, Joe Sakic went to bat for him. So Pat Verbeek is bringing in his guy. You know him as an assistant for the Islanders, Maple Leafs, longtime coach.
You know, he was the coach of the Colorado Eagles for like five seasons. I did not realize he was there that long.
Yeah.
What do you think? He's been a lifer. He's 6 years old now. Like, you've been around him in some capacity in his previous jobs.
Yeah, some capacity. Not really, I don't have strong feelings in this one. It's one of those, like, we were talking about it a little bit, like, hey, don't recycle coaches, but then it's like,
guess what we
call one up and we're like, we'll see.
6 year old AHL coach, huh? I think it makes sense for the Ducks, because he's helped players graduate from the AHL to the NHL for the Avs. He gets a lot. Joe Sakic certainly gives him a lot of credit for that.
Yeah,
like helping those guys get prepped for what comes next over the last couple years. Sakic publicly gives him a lot of credit for it. Verbeek gave him a lot of credit for it in the release. So I think for where they are in their life cycle, I think he makes sense.
Yeah.
And you said it, like, everybody loves to complain the moment a coach who's been fired as an NHL head coach gets another job. Like, it's reflexive. And I get it. It can be annoying. In some cases, which we're going to go on to discuss here, it certainly is annoying. But this is what it looks like. No, you love it because you love every coach that's ever.
Keep recycling, baby. No, like, look at the Stanley Cup final.
This is what it looks like.
Paul Maurice and Bruce Cassidy. Yeah. It's not
totally.
I'm not saying
100%.
Don't promote the AHL because you can. You know, there's John Cooper. All these guys have. There's. I don't get. I mean, I get when people just like when they just rotate people that haven't had success in years. I get all that. Like, it seems uninspired, and when there's not even a process, and it just seems like there's some weird connection to the GM. I get that. That's why you're watching with the New York Rangers are the most interesting one to me right now. In terms of the vacancies left.
Can we say that they didn't really have a plan here? Because it seems like they're zeroing in on Peter Laviolette, which you said at this, you told me before we started recording.
Well,
Gerard Gallant's moving. Like, it seems like he's the guy in Calgary. Laviolette's the guy in.
If we're just doing the musical chairs, it's almost like the goalie market. It's like, here's the two goalies left. Here's the two spots left.
Oh my God, that's the way it was. That's where the goalie market specifically was last season. Yeah. It was hilarious. This guy's just trading jobs. The Rangers' plan, clearly, I think it's safe to say, like, the most obvious answer here is that their plan was their assumption was that Mike Sullivan was going to shake loose from the Rangers. Yeah. You can read between the lines there. We've seen more than enough reports coming out of New York to that effect. And that was, this is actually good. I'm glad I can say this on the pod. That was never going to happen. Never. Mike Sullivan to the Rangers was never, ever, not ever going to happen. I don't know why it was a discussion point. I don't know what about the situation made the Rangers seem to believe that, you know, they could throw a Hail Mary and shake him loose. It wasn't going to happen. He signed a new contract. He already makes a shitload of money. He likes it here. He's the owner's guy. I'm saying not in a million bajillion. Stone cold lead pipe lock from Sean Gentile. Mike Sullivan will never go. No, it wasn't going to happen. It was pipe dream stuff.
Here's what I'll say. If it's Peter Laviolette to the Rangers, everyone's going to get all worked up. I'm not that mad about it. I'm not. Peter Laviolette has won a lot of games. He knows how to navigate the playoffs.
I'm not mad about it. I think from a procedural standpoint, I'm not down with firing a coach with that little of a plan in place, right? That might be unfair to say, because they knew. Here's probably the caveat there is you knew that Laviolette was going to be available. Like that divorce was on the way. It may have already happened, honestly, now that I think about it. So you see, like, if all else fails, we can get Laviolette and he's a good coach. I understand. But it's just crazy that, you know, this is, it's June 6th and this is where it's all ending.
Florida, Vegas, that hit, there's no debate, but a lot of talk about it.
I think people were ready to debate it.
People wanted to debate it. It's actually really refreshing. We're like, we wrote about it. Pierre LeBrun had a piece. He talked to some coaches and players and Steven Stamkos and Getzlaf, and just a lot of like.
That was in the works, by the way. That was in the works like immediately, because we have like a planning channel in Slack for all of us where it's like, here's who's on site for these games. Here's who's like tasked with watching from the couch, like whatever. Pierre sent up the the Pierre flare at the, as soon as that had happened, it was like, he was like, I'm doing this. I'm talking to people. Like, here's what you guys can expect from me tonight.
The best comment might've come from, I think it was Mike Modano who said something like, there was 40 of those, the 1997 postseason or whatever. Like, he's like, what are we?
Yeah. He was like, it happened to me every game.
I listed that in every shift. Come on, can we just chill out here? But it did seem to galvanize Vegas. They just look like they're steamrolling. But here, look, I'm just going to say we're shifting to Florida. Let's see what game three looks like. I know everybody's ready to coronate the Golden Knights here, but but Florida's going home. It does look like the wheels are falling off, and that the, you know, that Bob in the, you know, is turning into a pumpkin or whatever. But I'm, you know, this game three, when you shift sites, maybe they can stop some of the momentum. I'm not ready to give in on the Panthers yet. This has been too incredible a run.
But these games, if you were to guess what a Panthers loss would look like, or what like what. You say Panthers lose games 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Like what? How are those games going to look at the start of this? At the start of the series,
you go into overtime or something at least.
No. Yeah. I'm saying like this is what I would have guessed. Oh. If you say after two games Vegas is up 2-0, what do you think those games look like? I would say Bob had the wheels fall off and they weren't getting like elite production from the top of the lineup, and the defensive group just wasn't up to snuff. And guess what? This is Vegas's unreal productive forward depth coming through. And it's Aiden Hill out. I mean, I don't even want to say out dueling Bob, because that gives Bob a little bit too much credit, I think, for how he's played the last couple of games. This is an ass kicking. Yeah. This is one goalie is significantly better than the other through two games. And I think, you know, I don't think I'm not overly surprised by it, but at the same time, like, could Bobrovsky snap back in and steal games 3 and 4? Like, for sure.
Yeah. One last bit before we get to Marty Walsh, and it's a great conversation, so definitely stick around for that. But there's a bit of news out of Harvard. I just wanted to mention Katie Stone, the women's hockey coach at Harvard, is announcing her retirement completely on her own.
What happened?
I probably just got tired of coaching. I don't know. Can't say for sure. Now, there was Harvard didn't mention in announcing the retirement of Katie Stone the Jenner and Block investigation. I don't think that was part of the announcement.
It was not.
I don't know. It doesn't seem like a great huge leap to suggest that might have had something to do with it.
Katie Stone, of course, the news comes following multiple articles by The Athletic's Haley Salvian and Katie Strang, alleging misconduct and mistreatment within her program. Again, this is just a based on the Harvard release, just a wild coincidence that happened a few months ago and that this is happening today.
Well,
interesting. Jenner and Block was hired to conduct a review of the women's hockey program following The Athletic's report that detailed hazing and sensitivity to mental health issues and other problematic behavior within the team going back 2 decades. Again, this is a coincidence that she just lost her job. Or
no, she retired.
No longer works there. Excuse me.
I would just say, you know, this has nothing to do with any of it, but make sure you just keep up with what Haley and Katie are reporting on this. Make sure if you haven't read the piece they wrote back in March, it's easy to find. I'll retweet it. Oh, I already did. So read that just to get it. You just get a, can get a sense of what Harvard's going to be missing in retirement. Coming up next.
On to Marty Walsh.
Marty Walsh joins us from Vegas, the new executive director of the NHLPA. And Sean, just a complete professional throughout his interview.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We are now thrilled to be joined with Marty Walsh, the new executive director of the NHL Players Association, who has been, I imagine, furiously meeting with players, getting to know a large group of people. Marty, well, first of all, thanks for doing this in what is a really busy time with the final going. But I wanted to start there. I know it's a big undertaking to get to know the membership, and I imagine that was job one for you. And I was curious how that process is going, what that's been like.
Yeah, it's been, first of all, thanks for having me today. It's exciting to be on. I look forward to the conversation. You know, when I interviewed for the job, I told the players that my goal is to not just meet every player, but to get to know every player. Mm-hmm. You know, you have 750 plus players. There's no reason why the leadership of the union can't know every single player personally. And we've spent, you know, obviously in the beginning of this, I started in April, and I was able to meet with a good amount of teams, players on teams, not everyone. Then the playoffs started a little more tricky, and now the final. So it's really tricky right now. You don't want to interrupt the players. Obviously, they're very focused, the Panthers and the Knights players. They're all focused on the playoffs. And I'm going to, over the summertime, meet with a ton of players when they get together. And then in the fall, they have something called, you probably know better than me, fall tour. And I'm going to get a chance to meet all the players and talk to them all. So it's been fun. It's been interesting. You know, I don't know how many players I met. Maybe a couple hundred so far.
Oh, wow.
You know, some have been a dinner. Some have been a cup of coffee. Some have been on the phone. Some have been in passing in different places, at rinks and practices, things like that. So, you know, I look forward to getting to know all the players and meeting them and hear what their challenges are, what their concerns are, what direction they want their union to go in. Mm.
I feel like something people maybe forget about is that NHL players aren't a monolith. You know, they're not all the same. There's guys who make more money. There's guys who make less. There's guys further in their career. There's guys who are just starting out their career. So I think that kind of divide in particular between the older guys and the younger guys and the bigger contract guys and the younger guys, that's a dynamic that I think publicly, like on our end of things, probably doesn't get talked about enough. And it's something that fascinates me. So I'm just curious how, you know, maybe over the last little bit, is that the sense you've gotten? Is there a need to bridge that gap and maybe get some other demographics or some other player buckets kind of involved?
No, you're absolutely right. It, just a couple things. You know, when I got the job and I was talking to people, about what I do, and this is a union, a lot of people assume that every player that plays in the National Hockey League is a millionaire. And that's not the case. I mean, some of their careers are short. They don't make max contracts. They don't have opportunities and there's life after hockey that they have to survive on. And so that's one thing. So I represent those players as well. And then also when I talk to the older players, the retired players, particularly from the 80s and 90s, they don't have pensions. Mm-hmm. They have a little bit of money coming in and they didn't make a lot of money. And you know, obviously the cost of living in the last 30 years has gone up and they're trying to survive. And now, you know, this union fought to get a collective bargaining agreement that has pensions in it. So the players of today will have something coming in when they retire, which is really important. So, you know, there's a divide there. So you want to look back and make sure you take care of the older players, but you also understand moving forward, how do you make sure these players have something when they retire? And, you know, there's a lot of people now that have earned a pension with the NHL. I don't think anyone's actually started collecting it yet in the modern era, if you will. You know, there's a lot we have to do, and there's a lot out there. And, you know, when you think of the sports, I mean, I'm speaking for hockey, you know, you're fighting for working class hockey players. That's what they are. And you want to make sure that while they're playing, they have all the protections and the ability to earn money and to help support their family. And then when they retire, you want to make sure you're laying down a foundation for them to go into other life. Because these players retire at in their 30s, mm-hmm. most of them, some going to the 40s. And so that's still, there's still a life in front of you,
yeah.
a whole life in front of you. And if you've been spending since you've been 13, 14 playing hockey, and now you wake up one morning, you're 37 and you're done, what do you do? So there's a lot we can do. So I know that's a lot I just said, but I look at this as the whole, not just career of the player, but the whole life of the player.
You look at the setup of where you are in history of the league and the PA when you're joining, and you've got a couple of years before you have to start worrying about kind of big picture things in terms. I think the current deal goes through the CBA through 25-26, but there are things I'm sure you want to address right away, and you're probably picking up some themes from players. Is there, revenue growth, all these things that players are impacted by? What are some short term things that you're focused on?
Well, I think, when you look at it, you're thinking about, when I talk to the players, they talk about, what's going on with the salary cap. And there was a deal cut in 2020 that the players paid large amounts of escrow to pay off the debt. That debt is coming down in a really fast way. There is still some debt left, so we have to figure that out before we can talk about raising salary cap more than $1 million this year. I mean, I don't, we'll see as we have these conversations over the next week and a half. World Cup, world best on best tournament. Players want to play in the Olympics. Players want to play in some type of World Cup play. We're looking at in that space. How do we create a tournament that happens every 4 years and not just one off, and then worry about it? 15 years after
Marty,
that.
We've been talking about that for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been a lot of conversations, but it's something the players want,
yeah.
and it's something that I'm going to focus on. We've had some informal conversations with the league already, and we're going to continue to have conversations there. Some players are concerned about life after hockey. Some players, like the Arizona Coyotes, are worried about playing in a professional hockey rink. I mean, they're playing right now in a college arena, and it's not the best circumstance for these players in Arizona. Maybe it might be exciting or fun once in a while for a team to come in and play in that arena, small arena. But if that's your home arena and you're playing in front of, 3,000 to 5,000 people every night, that's not an experience that you should have, or that's not what you fought your whole life for to get in the NHL. And now you're playing in front of, 3,500 people. That's just not fair in a lot of ways. So there's a lot of different issues that come up in the course of conversation with players. There's not one theme that goes through everybody. Not every player is interested in the World Cup of Hockey. Not every player is interested in the cat salary cap. So there's a lot of different themes that come up that we're kind of focused on. And I think when you think about unions, you represent, it's work conditions, making sure the ice is good, making sure the facilities are up to par, making sure that, they have all the things they need in their arenas and for them to do their job.
I'm sure we're going to get to a couple of those other pieces in a minute. We're going to ask about the Coyotes, I'm sure. But I wanted to hit the cap first. I understand the desire to pay down the escrow and pay down the debt and rip off that Band-Aid and get it squared away, for next season. How do you balance that desire with the fact that there is a group of UFA players that's about to hit the market in July that will have less money than they would have otherwise? Are there players out there who are like, well, we could bump up the cap now because I'm coming up the UFA and I'd like for there to be a little bit more money to spread around to pay me now versus next year?
I've definitely spoken to players that are in that situation and they're concerned about that. And I have not talked to owners, but I know general managers are concerned about that as well. There's a couple things that are outstanding. One is the 1920 and 2021 hockey-related revenue that has to be finalized. If we can get that finalized sooner rather than later and get to an agreement, Gary Bettman referred to it the other day as bean counting, and it literally is bean counting. We're going through whatever the numbers are. That will give us a clear picture of what debt's left. And at that point, I think what you do is you weigh the debt left against the escrow to see if there's any room under the current escrow system to be able to raise the salary cap. And I think until if we can get those numbers resolved, and that's a negotiation between us and the league. And if we can get those numbers resolved, hopefully in the next week or two, we have an understanding there might be some room there. Short of that, you know, I'm pretty clear in the fact that, well, I say I am, we, the players are pretty clear. They don't want to raise the escrow cap for salary cap increase. They just don't want to do that. They've paid a lot. They've been, they've paid a lot over the last several years on escrow. And I think that it's something that we need to hopefully come up with a positive resolution there. And then we move forward. I am getting calls, a couple of players calling me every week on this, asking me what's going on because they're free agents and they're fairly well known and they want to be able to, some of them want to stay with the team they're with. And I think if you're a team, you're going to want to, if you have a team and you have a good core of players and some of those players of your core are unrestricted free agents and they can go on the open market, you don't want to lose them because right. you can't replace some of these players overnight. I mean, it's hard to replace them. So I think that's something that I think a lot of people are very paying a lot of attention to on both sides of the aisle, on the club side and on the player side.
So just to be clear, I feel like we're resigned to the 1 million increase, but you're saying there may be the opportunity for some flexibility depending on HRR.
I think we have to look and see, like I said, what the debt is after these two seasons are put in the bank. And, you know, unfortunately, one of these two seasons were COVID seasons. So we're not talking hundreds of millions right. of dollars. Mm-hmm. I wish we were because that make it a lot easier, but we're not talking hundreds of millions of dollars. But I think that, you know, I'm not going to close the door automatically today. I will say this though, and the commissioner Bettman said this the other day too. If there's debt that's not paid back, you know, we're not going to change the escrow. Mm-hmm. But if there's debt that's not paid back that we know that some percentage of the escrow could cover and there's still a little bit more there in the escrow, maybe we could have another conversation about it.
Is there an easy explanation like for us or for fans or whoever as to why this hasn't been locked in yet? Because we obviously are not privy to so much that goes on there. But from the outside, you're like, okay, it's June 5th. How do we not have the exact number?
Well, I asked that question because I'm new in the shop, so I'm only a couple months in. I asked that same question, and I think the world of sports is similar to the world of politics. It's like, let's, you know, the debt ceiling conversation in Congress, it took the last hour of the last day to get a resolution. And, you know, that's not my style, but I'd like to get we should have got a resolution 2 months ago. They could have come up with a resolution just like they came up with the other day. And I think the same for sports. We look at these deadlines. And we go up against these deadlines. And I think it would make it so much easier for everyone to understand that, you know, if fans knew that there was salary cap increase, you know, look at the Bruins. The Bruins are way over the salary mm-hmm. cap for next year. Mm-hmm. It's my hometown where I'm from. And, you know, fans aren't really paying attention to that yet, but they realize, like, if certain players decide to come back for another year, there's no room under that salary mm-hmm. cap right now. So they have to figure it out.
Certain players. one big one if yeah right.
So I imagine out of the players you've talked to, and it's a pretty good number that you made a big dent already, a lot of those are on the Arizona Coyotes because that came to a head, and so I mean, you mentioned the arena, but now like that future is completely up in the air, and it seems to me for a, you know, membership that wants to increase revenues, putting that team in a city where you can do that fairly dramatically would make a lot of sense. How do you balance that against, you know, these players that are there now and trying to figure out what the future holds?
Well, I think first and foremost, the league has put a lot of investment in keeping the Coyotes in Arizona. Obviously, it's been going on for a few years.
Yeah.
You know, the ballot initiative that went down the other day, I don't know if it surprised anybody, but you know, when you put the interesting thing there was no money involved. It was just simply approving the project. I mean, there wasn't any public finance in that project, but it went down. You know, I think the commissioner said at his press conference the other day that he's trying to see one or two more plays in Arizona. And if that doesn't work, he's going to look what's next. And, you know, I simply just feel that, you know, this coming season, if there's not a resolution soon, I'm not going to put a deadline on it yet before the season starts or halfway through the season. But if you don't have a resolution soon, meaning in the next, you know, several bunch of months here, we have to make a decision on what's going to happen to the future of that team. You can't, you know, that team, if that ballot initiative passed, we were talking, you know, two, three, four more seasons in the in the Mullet Arena. That's a long time, but at least there's a new building being built. And I think that, you know, the fans of Arizona, the hockey fans there, and more importantly, the players deserve, I don't mean more importantly because the fans are really important too, but they deserve to understand clarity what's happening here. And so I'm staying in close contact with the league on that. I've met with the Coyotes players several times. We had an in-person meeting before before the season ended. I went to a game in Arizona, you know, met with the owner of the team, president of the team, commissioner was there, I was there. And then we had a Zoom meeting not too long ago with the players to talk about where we're headed. And they're very active and interested in what's going to happen. You know, when they moved into the Mullet, you had younger players that were kind of new in the league. And now that they're becoming heading towards the prime of their career, they want to play in an arena, number one, that's an NHL arena, number one. Number two, they want to play for a team that can reach the Stanley Cup and win and go for championships. And they want to be able to have a team that can attract free agents to their area and play for their team. So right now, I think a lot of that's kind of in question until there's a plan moving forward, meaning a real concrete, this is what we're doing. New arena is being built, there's a shovel in the ground, cranes in the ground, mm-hmm. you know, steel going up, or we're going to a new place and this is what we're going to do and this is how we're going to do it.
How would you characterize the way players feel about that playing environment over the last 6 months? Like, did it change, like, from the, like, did they get sick of it? I think that's kind of what I'm asking.
I think you can assume that, you know, if you're a National Hockey League player and you're playing in a college arena and you're the second tenant in there, you're not even the first tenant. That's a problem, number one. And number two, you know, these players played really hard. There was a couple of stretches in the league. They had games. I think they went 1.10 games without losing a game. They got a point in 10 games. You know, they play hard, and they're a good group of guys. And I think it's really important for us to make sure that for them, I mean, the league owes them an opportunity to be in a professional hockey league arena.
Yes.
And play in an atmosphere where it's NHL arena. And the fans deserve it too. I mean, the fans deserve an NHL arena to go and watch their team play.
You know, it didn't even occur to me to think of the fact that if you're an NHL player in Arizona, you're not only are you playing in front of whatever, a few thousand people, you're right. Your hope for building a successful team is not as high as elsewhere. You're not going to get the big free agent. You're not going to be able to make. And so, like, if you're a player, why would you even want to be there? It's a great point to raise. The other thing, I mean, you mentioned Gary, you mentioned conversations with Gary Bettman. I think everyone's always fascinated by the relationship between the head of the PA and the commissioner and longtime commissioner. How would you describe so far your relationship with Gary Bettman?
I mean, it's pretty open conversations. I told Gary and he told me the same thing, that we can just call each other if there's a problem or an issue, just pick up the phone. And you know, it's still early in the relationship. So we're still in the honeymoon phase here, which is a good one. I think that people automatically assume a union and a company or a league and the player associations should have an adversary relationship. And there are definitely issues that we will probably clash over in the future. There's no question about it. But it also is about, there's a relationship there. I think that's really important to grow the game of hockey and to grow the sport and to do everything we can for the players, for the ability for the players to maximize their time and their talent. And I think that, you know, we're both of those can be done at the same time. And I've seen it in my entire career where you have companies that work with the unions and they're very successful. And I've seen times where companies and unions have a brutal relationship, adversarial, terrible relationship. And at the end of the day, it hurts the product, whether it's a private company or a sports league. And it also hurts the employees in that relationship, in the management in that relationship. So right now we have a strong, I would say a good relationship. And hopefully we'll continue a good relationship moving forward here.
We've seen a relatively clean postseason, at least as it relates to suspendable hits and Department of Player Safety stuff. In your job, how much thought have you given to reconciling, you know, those suspendable hits and making sure that they, you know, happen as infrequently as possible, while also, you know, the you know, dealing with the issue of suspending guys and taking money out of their pockets as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, this is the first time that I've dealt with something like this, obviously. And it's something that, you know, in the offseason, we'll talk to the players as well. It's a conversation that we'll bring up at Fall Tour and talk to them about it because we represent both.
Right. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Player that does the offense, and we represent the player that is on the other end of it. And, you know, I think it's really important for us to have these conversations as we move. You know, every sport is physical. Maybe not baseball, but and that gets physical sometimes too. Every sport's physical, and when the intensity gets higher, you know, you're talking about, you know, the other night in the game, Stanley Cup game, you know, early in the first period, there was all kinds of, you know, big body hits and things like that happening, and that's just the intensity of the game. We just need to make sure that people are protected and taking care of each other, and realizing that's, you know, even though that person that you're playing against, we're all in the same tent. We're all under the same roof. Like, we have to, you know, I don't want to take the intensity out of the game because that would makes it so great. But how do we make sure that we protect the players so no one gets hurt? And you know, when they get on the ice in the beginning of the game, they get a chance to get off the ice at the end of the game and come back and not have an injury that's going to cause them long-term damage.
You mentioned baseball. It's been interesting from afar to watch how remarkably they've changed the game with their rule, like pretty aggressive rule changes to address fan frustrations. I mean, I went to a Tigers game with my kids and we were in and out in 2.5 hours, which I can't remember the last time that happened. And you're a big Patriots season ticket holder, right? You know the NFL really well. I'm just curious, the NHL seems like they've been really good about, you know, raising franchise values, but maybe not great at maximizing revenue as a league. Like, it seems like they haven't been as ambitious on that front in terms of the fan experience, doing creative things to bring in more money, quite frankly. And I'm just wondering if there are things you can learn from the NFL or baseball or some of these other sports, NBA. I mean, it just seems like they're way out front on doing fun, cool, exciting things for fans to bring excitement to the game.
Yeah, this, and that goes back to when I was talking earlier about the relationship between the commissioner and us and me. There is an important aspect here to have a positive relationship to think about growing the game.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I mean by that. And certainly it's an area that we're going to take a deep dive in as a PA, Player Association, to look at in our sponsorships, in our licensing agreements, and looking at how do you promote the game? You look at football and basketball, I think, have done a brilliant job of really promoting their games.
Yes.
I mean, basketball, whether it's on the court, off the court, it's, you know, the commercials that the players are in, you know, every night you turn on the TV, there's a basketball player in a commercial somewhere. Football is a little different sport because they're kind of, it's Sunday. They own Sunday during the season. They own Thursday night during the season, and they own Monday night during the season. So they own those games, and they're able to capture that in a unique, brilliant way. And I think that we have to start thinking outside the box. How can we do similar things, whether it's owning a particular time on TV? Mm. How do we promote the players in areas? How do we promote the great part of the game? I think there's an opportunity with diversity. There's two Indigenous players playing in the Stanley Cup Finals. There's a couple of players of color playing in the Stanley Cup Finals. You're talking about more activity, getting more opportunity in other demographic, you know, fan base to think about. I mean, I think one of the reasons why Gary's so focused on Arizona and Dallas is because of Latino community and lots of Latino community. Is there a way for us to grow the game even more in the Latino community? And I think that there's opportunities there. I think that we have to look at our international travel and see, like, where are we going? And are we, you know, making a long-term plan, not a short-term plan? You know, basketball did it. Football's doing it. Are they going different places? And investing in some of this, but making sure that we have analysis that shows that we're making a difference. Like, the first time you go to a city or another country, you might not see the benefit of that. But if you go there for 3 or 4 seasons, can we see the market share grow by going to those places? I think you start to look at analytics a little differently as well. I want to bring a lot more analytics to the NHLPA. I did it when I was mayor of Boston, and you see the benefit of that. And you bring those analytics to the league now, and they're doing some of it as well. But I don't know all they're doing yet. But how do we work to grow the game of hockey? And when you grow the game of hockey, every new fan buys a shirt, buys a stick, maybe plays the game. You know, the kids play the game. They're involved now, and all of a sudden, you're naturally growing the game of hockey.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned increasing diversity. A big part of that, I mean, we're going to bring up the Pride Night stuff from March. You want to increase diversity. There have been those issues with teams having their Pride Nights waylaid by players, you know, who would rather not take a part. How do you reconcile the desire for more diversity whenever stuff like that happens that makes it an undeniably, you know, less hospitable place for that kind of community?
Yeah, I don't think you focus on the downside of that. I think you focus on how do you fix that? How mm-hmm. how do you educate people on that? And I think that, you know, I've talked to a couple of players that didn't wear the jersey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get a chance to talk to them and there's different reasons for religious beliefs or their own personal, what they believe in. And when you get a chance to talk about it and talk it through, all of a sudden people say, well, you know, I understand where you're coming from. And I think that rather than, at least on the PA side, rather than focus on the negative perception, how do we change that, and how do we take that as a learning moment, learning experience, and teaching experience more accurately and moving forward? I think we can. I mean, listen, I said this from the very beginning, my first press conference. I was in the Massachusetts legislature when marriage equality was given by the Supreme Court of Massachusetts, and I, you know, I was the floor leader for the LGBTQ community. We preserved marriage equality in Massachusetts. It was not this is a great idea in 2004. Since that time, it's completely changed. I mean, the whole feel of around the gay community, and, you know, and we have to understand that, you know, the gay community that's out there, you know, it's about inclusion, not exclusion. It's about working with the gay community and about making sure people feel comfortable. And when I say comfortable, I'm talking about the gay community should feel welcome to the NHL hockey. You're talking, you know, 90 whatever, 8% of the players are wearing the jersey, and we, you know, the press and everyone focus on the one or two players that don't wear the jersey. I understand that. I appreciate that. That's life. But we have to take this as a learning opportunity, and how do we make life better to let people know it is truly an inclusive game, and it is an inclusive game. NHL is an inclusive sport, and we want to continue to make it inclusive.
Well, Marty, we appreciate your time. I know your schedule is packed, and you've got a lot on your plate. So, thank you for taking some time to chat with us, and safe travels and best of luck moving forward.
This is great, and I just want to make sure everyone that's watching tune in to game 2, 3, 4, and then if we go
5, 6, 7, let's go.
All right, we want to get the ratings up. We stop growing hockey by getting higher ratings, so that's let's right. do it.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Marty.
Thanks, Marty.
Thank you.
Take care.
Hey, guys.
Bye. That was really good, Sean. I like that Marty's pumping up TV ratings. He's already like, we got to get those revenues. We got to get the cap up.
I love that you ask, like, hey, why are franchise valuation so high but revenue is so flat? That's the question. That is the everyday question for the NHL.
Yeah,
what's going on?
That's going to be the biggest thing, and it's always this fine line between, and he said it, like, you have to work with the league to get to do some of these things, but I would like to see the PA push the league more on these issues. Like, the league's not going to do it, clearly. It's the same folks that have been, like, we know the playbook coming out of New York. So If there's going to be anything progressive in the revenue generation front, like, other leagues are, like, baseball, like, the boringest of all sports, yeah, is like, let's rewrite the rule book to make it more fun and entertaining.
The other thing that I'd like that I'm interested in seeing in the next set of CBA negotiations is the hockey related revenue definition. I think that could be fun.
Yeah, we always hear about that, and then nothing comes of it.
Never know. New boss.
Yeah.
Hey, do you want to hear the moment that I bailed on a joke?
Yeah.
It was when he said, my hometown Boston Bruins. And I was going to say, oh, really? You're from Boston?
I would have laughed.
He might not have.
He would have. He seems like
that. Of course he would have. But he wanted to get up there and talk some serious stuff with us, right?
Yeah.
Clearly, that was his aim there. So I'm not going to. Not going to begrudge him that.
You're not going to start cutting him off. All right. Coming up next, we take your questions and turn them into a full segment called The Only Good Segment on the Show. The Only, right? Okay.
We'll be right back.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
This is the only good segment on the show. So we dive into the comments, allow you fine folks to do our jobs for us. I think we maybe put out some kind of a challenge last week.
Did we?
Yeah, did we? We asked for more. Guess what? You provided it, and here's how you provided it. You open the app. Mm-hmm. You get it. You click through and
you gotta click the listen tab. Don't forget. Then you gotta find the episode. It would be easier if our names were in the headline. I think we should work that in. Or some, you know, just.
I think we should. You know what? The show should just be called Sean Gentile and Craig Cousins. Oh, actually, you're the boss, so you can go first. Craig Cousins and Sean Gentile present the Athletic Hockey Show, and that is what the baseline everyday title of the show is.
And then. The other days that we
Ian Mendez and Sean McIndoe.
Hey, welcome to Craig Custance and Sean Gentile present the Athletic Hockey Show. I'm Ian Mendez.
That's right.
Okay. I think that would be a lot easier
for us, and you can make this happen now, Mr. Whatever your fucking title is these days. Mm-hmm. Ariel R.
Okay.
I love this question. This is flat out not a hockey question at all. So I love it even more. Ariel R., what's the most petty but ultimately harmless curse you could place on someone? For example, when you go to use ketchup, you'll get the watery part first, or you'll never be able to find nearby parking. Thanks, guys, and happy Pride. Happy Pride to you, Ariel. Being able to find nearby parking is not harmless. I think if that happened to me, I would maybe come to an untimely end.
I drive my wife crazy. I don't care about parking. I would rather...
I don't either.
Just cut to the chase, get to the back and park by myself and walk.
I am absolutely like, if I see spot, pull into spot. I'm like, I'm not fucking doing this.
Yeah.
So it's more like the idea of driving around looking for parking is an anxiety trigger. Just the thought of doing that is a nightmare.
Yeah.
Dude, we went to the Pirates game on Saturday. It was a 4 o'clock game. Mm-hmm. There was a bunch of other stuff going on in downtown Pittsburgh. There was a Pride Parade. There was the Arts Festival. There was like other events happening. And then there was a basically sold out Pirates game on the North Shore. Yeah. So traffic was a catastrophe. Oh, and there was construction. We're getting way into the weeds here. The bridge, you know, the big yellow bridge that you see from PNC Park when you look out on TV, that's closed. It's been closed for months. It will be closed for more months, but that completely catastrophizes the traffic pattern downtown. The end result there was that we sat in a fucking parking garage for like 45 minutes trying to get down from it. And I was ready to lose my mind. So Ariel, I understand what you're saying here. But any kind of parking related curse,
I mean, the ketchup
is not harmless.
Like it's harmless to get the juice, but that's disgusting. Same with the mustard. Like if you just get the water out first and then it soaks your bread in a sandwich, that's brutal. That ruins. I think like anytime like you step in like water without realizing it, that to me would be my curse. Like if there's a puddle, you always find it. And your socks get wet.
Or if you're like going for a run or out for a walk or whatever, and you have to sit there and deal with, you know, wet sock for a while. Disaster.
I think also disaster. Maybe it's petty but harmless. Every time you pick a line, like at like a toll booth or getting into Canada or whatever, you pick the wrong one. Like, and you have
I feel
to sit
like that's
and watch.
Already I my mean, life. Honestly,
I've already I cursed you with that. You didn't realize it when we first met.
Shit. Did you like that? That's another one though. Do you switch?
No. I'm a very mm-mm. big like
I ride or die.
This is my line.
We are
we
very
are
similar
it.
Here. This is interesting. Yeah. I love that. And is Cassie also like?
Oh, she drives. She's like, look at the other
back
line.
And forth.
Look at this line.
This is really funny.
That line's moving.
We have a lot in common here. Okay.
I'm like this. Hey, we picked this line. I am not bailing on this line
it.
Just because
I'm,
the other
I'm
line.
I'm turning my brain off. We're listening to music. Yeah. Like I don't give. I like however long this lasts.
Like
it lasts.
I can't live like constantly looking at what's going on in the other line.
I'm a big fan of making decisions and never revisiting them or reflecting upon them.
Yeah, maybe that's.
I'm gonna do. This is how I do things. This is just the way it's gonna go.
Yep.
Tim S, how wide is the gap of? How is the wide on the gap on the list of things that are awful between Gary Bettman in front of a mic and whatever is number two? Tim, I'm not going to answer this question necessarily, but I would like to say that a big tone of the comments in the Atlanta story is people calling me a shill for Gary Bettman.
Really? I didn't see that. Shill. Yeah. I knew it, Sean.
Yeah, that's me. That's me. If there's one hallmark of my career thus far, it's that I'm in the tank for Gary. And also that Gary is in the tank for Atlanta. That's the way it goes. If there's one thing I love, it's Gary Bettman. And if there's one thing Gary loves, it's hockey in Atlanta.
Boy,
sure.
He fought to keep that market going for years.
See, he's like, can I FedEx you the keys to the moving facilities? Unreal.
Yeah. What? We got to go out of Atlanta. Okie doke. We're out of here.
Okay.
Aaron L says, I took an edible and I want to know who wins the athletic war. The Russo army.
This is so funny. Go ahead.
The Custance Company, Gentili Guerrillas, Mendez Mercenaries, Salvian SEAL Team 6, Dom's Model, Shayna's Gold Men, really Sean McIndoe, and the 1983 Wendell Clarks.
I think you saved the best one for last. That's really funny.
Aaron, I mean, it's Russo's army.
These are all violent. Okay, so you have a full army for Russo. You have a company of an army for you. Guerrillas, I think that makes sense for me.
That does.
SEAL Team 6.
Salvian SEAL Team 6? Yeah, who's betting against the SEAL Team 6 led by Haley?
Not Osama bin Laden, I'll tell you that much. Yeah, we got him!
That was a timely reference. Hey, all I know is my company, though, I will stick with them to the bitter end. And even if it looks like SEAL Team 6 is winning, Custance Company's going down together. Just like the line into the border.
Me and the gorillas, baby. It's like Red Dawn. What have you. I don't know. That's really pathetic. That's the first group of... That's what comes to mind for me, a guerrilla warfare.
Red Dawn?
Is a Red Dawn. Craig is basically Ruxin from the league, says Alex M, but it's condescension instead of sarcasm. Even when he doesn't mean to do it, it still sounds like condescension. My advice, lean into it. If you attempt to sound condescending, it will probably make you sound even more condescending.
All right.
How do you respond to that?
I've got no response. Condescending is the last thing I want to sound like. I'm like hurt by this, Sean.
I love that. No, condescending. Just, hey, how could you? How could you sweet summer children out there think that I'm condescending? Of all the things you could call me, that's simply, it's the most foolish, I must say, my dear boy. Eric A. wants to know who really cares about the Conn Smythe. Nobody. He answers his own question. What the people really want to know is who is the Tuesday Boys, hashtag Tuesday Boys 3Zs, American-born MVP of the playoffs. Who are the current Final Four?
I mean, Jack Eichel.
It has to be, and Tkachuk's still in the conversation. Aiden Hill is from Canada, which I just had to double check on.
Is he?
It's okay. It's Eichel versus Tkachuk.
Yeah,
gotta be right. Who else is even in the conversation? Because think of all the guys at the top of Vegas's lineup. William Karlsson, no. I think, by the way, William Karlsson and Jonathan Marchessault are going to get caught. votes if this keeps up.
Yeah, he might win it.
He was my pick ahead of the final to win it.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about this, like this final and the play, you know, the Tkachuk versus Eichel, Vegas versus Florida. I mean, this is a really American, like this is
totally
like, invested in these markets, these kind of non, like it's just, it's a very American flavor. Oh, and this folks, is probably, speaking of American and Chris Chelios, we've been, Richard Deitch confirmed that he's out at ESPN, one of the best American defensemen of all time, but in terms of his analysis during intermission, we talked about it a lot. ESPN is a distant second to what's happening with the TNT.
I just want to use this to honestly to talk about how great TNT has become. I had that reaction again last night.
Yeah.
I can't believe how good Gretzky is. I can't believe it. He gets better every game. The jump he's made from year one to year two is unbelievable. And he was pretty good to start with.
Yeah.
The sense of humor is there all the time. He's got that kind of confidence that allows him to not speak all that often, which I think is important because you have, you know, guys like Biz and Anson Carter, like and Liam and whatever, they're the ones that do the heavy lifting in terms of guiding the conversation and whatever else, but you can have Gretzky come in and drop the hammer when he needs to. And I think he's got a way of making high level, you know, analysis really accessible, which I was not expecting. And he knows the players, like he's all in on it. And like, is he the most compelling, like charismatic, you know, broadcaster that you're going to see? No. But geez, he fills a role and it's great to see him. I'm surprised at my own reaction to watching him night after night. I love it. I love that show. They do a great job.
Yeah.
And also Russo has a story coming out on Liam McHugh in the next couple of days, which is worth reading because Liam's the guy that makes everything go there. So shout out to TNT. I think ESPN, you know,
back to the drawing board. It looks like,
yeah, got to figure their shit out. I guess we'll see.
The chemistry there just doesn't feel right as a viewer.
If you're paying, they have a lot of money invested in PK Subban. They have a lot of, he's got the ESPN Plus show and whatever. If that's who you've thrown in with, you got to surround him with people that have a chance to work. And I think it was pretty clear that Chelios and Messier to some extent were not working out there. There's ESPN budget cuts and whatever else. So here we are. Is Phil Kessel getting his name on the cup if Vegas wins? Asked David S. The answer is yes. He played all 82 regular season games. The rule is if you play more than 41 regular season games or one game in the final, you get your name on the cup. So Phil Kessel, three times engraved on the cup if Vegas finishes up here.
All right. Producer Jeff is tapping his watch. So I do want to get, we did ask for people to rank their corporate drugstores. Okay. Because as we know, we've got our partnership with CVS where the Tuesday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show plays throughout CVS stores in the United States.
Oh my God. Wait a second. Hold on. We got to go specifically into Bob M here because this is a Western PA. This is a Pittsburgh.
All right. I'm reading Bob that M and goes, I'm going, I have no idea what yep. Bob M is talking about. So
Bob M goes Thrift Drug.
Number three.
Sure. Thrift Drug was, I believe that was absorbed by either Eckerd. There was a wave of corporate drugstore consolidation taking place in Western Pennsylvania in the late 1990s, as I've said before. Three Thrift Drug, two Revco, one Farmore, particularly the Parkway Center location. Loved Farmore. My cousin used to go to the Farmore near Century 3 Mall and steal baseball cards from it. We were in East Liberty Farmore.
Is out of business.
Because
87 tops.
Because name redacted stole, you know, whatever, too many wax packs baseball cards from 1992 or whatever. SJH, drugstore at Bartels. Perry G says consumer value stores, aka CVS from Massachusetts, originally is obviously the choice. I disagree, Perry, respectfully. This is a thrift jug. This is a Rite Aid household.
That's fine. I mean, I established a big CVS household. Again, it's all about proximity. They're all the same.
No, they're not.
Thomas H., really quick, because we are going to do the end of season Tuesday Boys Awards, so get your question that you guys have to name and nominate and do all the work for, as always. But the question is, did I make enough appearances this year to vote on the Tuesday Boys Awards? That's a really good question.
He's a non-voting member of the Academy. It's going to be me and Max and Jeff. We can go back and go through the ones from last year because they were really funny. We can reuse a bunch of those.
Yeah,
but
we'll
if you guys
them.
Have, if any folks out there have creative ideas, hit us with them.
We need at least one or two new awards that are American centric and reflect the year that was. But we will go back to it.
Sure.
Anything else, Sean?
That's it. Get us out of here. You need to leave in a couple minutes.
Oh, I know. I don't want to. Next meeting's not nearly as fun. Hey, I want to thank Marty Walsh for joining me podcast. And Greg Cronin is coming next week. So, good. I'm meeting this the first time. To join Max and Sean, I'm out next week. So,
yeah, that's why you littered the discussion with backhanded compliments for Greg Cronin.
Hey, I think he's going to do a great job. Max loves him.
Me too.
I know that. Max was fired. I got when that was announced, I got a text from Max, just like 5 exclamation points. Great hire. Also, don't forget to subscribe to The Athletic Hockey Show on YouTube, youtube.com/@ The Athletic Hockey Show, where I'm sure the Marty Walsh, if you want to watch it, the video form, you should do that.
I think I like moved around less in that one than I typically do even.
Yeah, I was a statue.
No?
Like always. That's all I think about.
Like a Labrador sitting.
Spotted a duck across the pond.
Exactly.
Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you at the award show.
Happy New Year.